Welcome to the Live Limitless podcast, everyone. I'm your host, Gigi Meyer, and we're going to be having a lot of conversations with experts in fitness, nutrition, lifestyle, in general health, but also in things like relationships, family, faith, business, sports, you name it. And we really just want this to be a space where you can learn how to break through all the things holding you back from living to your true potential one by one. It's time to live limitless. Let's dive in. Ben, welcome to the Live Limitless podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here all the way from London, right? So what time is it there?
It is 4:15 p.m.
P.m.? Okay. I never know because I feel like whenever I... First question, do you sleep? Because I feel like whenever I message you, whether it's like through the Trainerize app or on Instagram, like you're always so quick to respond and I never know what time it is. I'm like, it might be in the middle of the night there. I don't know, but
yeah, I have very random hours of sleep.
Really?
And I've probably been sleep deprived for the last 5 years, just from the work, but it's, you know, work. So I probably shifted my life closer to Eastern time.
Wow.
Than UK time, just because of, you know, I can't have my schedule open in the morning for calls because everyone in the US is still asleep. So it's just not practical. So it's like, I get to do all of my like admin stuff where I'm not going to be bothered by anyone in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then by like noon, 1, 2 PM, it's where everyone starts to wake up and then the messages come in and I have calls and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So it's more like I'm just working late. Like,
yeah. Oh, okay. Gotcha. Is London where you were born and raised?
No. So I live about 2 hours west of London, but I was born in the southwest of the UK, and then I lived in Wales for like 10 years, just because I went to university there. So went to university and then just stayed there afterwards because I just love Wales. Wow. So yeah, awesome place.
That's awesome. So yeah,
been around the UK. It's great.
Love and it. You've been to America a handful of times, right?
Yeah, really random states. So like I've been to Ohio, Austin, and Rochester in New York.
Okay.
And Scottsdale.
So okay. Like just
really
to me,
yeah,
for the, and all them.
Yeah, for the event in February. So
what part of
I've
Ohio?
Been to a couple places. I think it was called Hilliard.
Hilliard.
Yeah,
no way. That's where I used to live, like really like 8 minutes from there. I used to live there for a couple years.
It's just suburbs. Like, I know. Like that's what stereotypical America it seems like to me.
Just, stereotypical, yeah. Ohio and America in general, for sure.
Yeah. And I went in like November as well, so it was freezing.
Oh, gosh. But, yeah. No, not grim. A good place.
No, I prefer Austin or Scottsdale for sure.
Yes, Scottsdale for sure. So let's just give everyone like a little bit of context of who you are and how I met you. Essentially, the common denominator here is John Madsen and Superhuman, obviously. Yes. So why don't you just explain a little bit of like what your role is at Superhuman?
Sure. So I started with Superhuman, I think, probably around 18 months ago. And so my role currently is the performance director. So I oversee the coaches that essentially work with all of our one-on-one clients within the business just to make sure that our fulfillment is kind of always, you know, providing the best value as possible to our clients, making sure we get the best results possible and just like continuing to improve the services that we provide, make sure that all of our coaches are kind of developing their own skill sets, you know, whether it's training or nutrition or mindset, you know, whatever it is that they can do to provide more value to their clients. So that's my role currently. Yeah.
And before you joined Superhuman, you were actually coaching John, right? In nutrition.
Yeah. So I previously worked for a company called Trevor Cashy Nutrition. And so they were close affiliated with Gym Launch. I'm not sure if you've heard of Gym Launch with Alex and Layla Hormozi.
Yeah.
Yes. Love
they're taking
guys.
Off. Layla
is like one of the most amazing people I've ever met.
They seem amazing.
And she cooks the best pancakes, like the best pancakes. Unreal.
That's a great fun fact about her.
Yeah. So I worked with Trevor Cash Nutrition. And so we had a lot of referrals from Gym Launch, especially when it was probably just before COVID, but everyone was starting to make the pivot to online coaching. Mm-hmm. So most people that had brick and mortar facilities, they wanted to essentially be like a hybrid facility where they did online fulfillment and in person. and they wanted to essentially know how to coach online. And at the time, Trevor Cashin Nutrition was probably one of the best online coaching companies. And so we had a lot of gym owners kind of sign up to our program. And then I think John was currently with Gym Launch. And so he signed up because he had was it Athletic AF was the previous kind of brand. And so I was working with him when that was kind of taken off. And we hit it off, you know, we just aligned with, you know, our views on training, nutrition, you know, client success, fulfillment, that kind of stuff. And I think it was January 2021. Mm-hmm. He put up a role that he was looking for a head coach. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just like immediately knew in my gut, I'm like, I need to message him. And I'm like, I need to come on board.
That's awesome.
So I think we spoke that day, and then I had made the decision by the end of that day, and was like, okay, like I'm all in. So yeah.
That is so awesome. Yeah. And it's really cool to see y'all like take off. Like, you guys are crushing it. I was there when he like first started all of it, because I was just starting what I was doing too. And I was just kind of like, he kind of took me under his wing and taught me a lot of what he was doing. And so it's just been really cool to see you guys grow so fast and expand so much. It's really cool. But take us back to like, even before that, like when you first started getting, and you said you went to university, was it for like nutrition training, stuff like that?
Yes. So so my dad was a natural bodybuilder. When I was about 14, 15, he used to compete, which kind of got me started in wanting to lift weights and stuff. You know, I was overweight as a kid. My dad never forced lift weights and be like, you know, you're overweight, you need to do something. Never had that. You know, it was like, hey, if you want to learn some stuff, I'll show you. And I think it was good because I was a bit heavier, I was terrible at body weight movements, like push-ups and I couldn't do a pull-up, but I was really good at like benching and stuff, because I had like, I just had good levers. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of like, I found something that I was like better than my friends at, and so I wanted to do more of it, and then kind of just got more and more into weight training. And so did kind of sports and exercise at, I guess we call it, it's college over here, but it's kind of like the interim between high school and university. And then I went to university to study sports biomedicine and nutrition, and then went on to do my master's in applied sports nutrition. So it was, there was like a gap in between, but it was all in all, I think it was about 6 years of studying to get those qualifications. But it was good fun, you know. No regrets there, but there's a huge limit to what you can actually apply to what you learn on like an academic side.
Right.
So I think looking back, I probably would have preferred to have studied psychology, because I would have learned the nutrition stuff myself anyway, because I was just passionate about it. And so like having a nutrition qualification doesn't really mean anything, because the barrier to entry to an online coach is zero. You know, you don't need a qualification to do it. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, if you have a background in psychology, you're going to be so far ahead of the curve in the ability to kind of communicate with your clients.
Yeah.
But then if you learn the nutrition side, then you're going to be a rock star.
Yeah. Wow. That's so true. And that's something I want to talk to you about a little bit, but that is primarily what I've learned just being a coach, is like psychology, you know, communication and the way you help, you know, it is a lot of psychology. Which is really interesting that you brought that up. But so you went through university, and I know you had talked about a mentor that you had met and that he kind of took you under your wing. When did you first start like actually coaching? Was it while you were at university, or when did all that
happen? Yes, so I worked at the university gym when I was studying. And so when I was there, I mean, that role was essentially like front desk, like giving gym inductions, making sure everyone is okay, showing people how to use equipment. And at the time, the manager of the gym was, she was amazing. And she was kind of like, look, like, I know you guys really want to start personal training, but it wasn't something that the university offered. So it was kind of like, if you want to personal train people, you can, you know, charge what you want and keep all of it. You know, it's like, it would just be kind of like hush hush. Yeah. You know, and because she did it as well, you know, just kind of out, as long as it was outside of your work hours, it's like you can train clients. And I was like, amazing. Mm-hmm. So I really just wanted to start training people because I loved it so much, you know, and to help someone else, try and get them to kind of be passionate about the thing which I was passionate about was just fun for me. Mm-hmm. So I started personal training at that gym. Yeah, and I still didn't have a personal training qualification at that time because I was just broke. Like, and it was like £1,500 to like get like a level 2 personal training qualification. I'm like, I had like £10 to my name, yeah, at the end of every month.
Wow.
And so eventually I was like, you know what, I need to get this qualification so I can go coach at another gym, because that was like the only barrier to entry that you had to have. Mm-hmm. And so got my personal training qualification, really got on well with the guy that was running the course. And I ended up coaching him. Oh. So like by the end of the course, he kind of asked me for like training, programming and nutrition, which was pretty cool. So I was personal training in 2 different gyms. And then that's when I met my mentor, Trevor Cashy, who I think I had hired him in 2014 for like a bodybuilding prep. So I found him through like a random blog online. Everything he said was kind of backwards to what I had learned, like the old school bro, yeah, like stuff that I was doing, like tons of protein, 6 meals, yeah, a day, blah, blah, blah. And everything he said was like the polar opposite. And I'm like, I just want to ask this guy some questions because I'm so curious. And he responded in like 2 minutes. And I'm like, oh my God, like I need to hire this person. So again, money that I didn't have, I was like, take it. And coached me through my prep, won the show. And then it was like, we kept in touch for about three or four years after that, just on and off. And so he was, I think he got recruited by like Azerbaijan to coach their wrestling team. So he was like living in a cave for like a year over there, just doing some crazy, wow, stuff with their Olympic team. And then come back and he had partnered up with a couple people, doing online coaching, and some things just changed within the company. And he essentially bought out the other owners and owned Trevor Cashy Nutrition. Mm-hmm. So he dropped me a message and said, need your help. I've got like 70 clients that I need coaching. Like, can you help me out? And I was like, anything for a friend. Of course, didn't expect to get paid or anything like that. I was like, you know, like you're a good friend. I'll do what I can. I've never coached online before, but I've seen the way you coach me. I can just mimic that. And so just jumped in at the deep end, like trial by fire. I had like 75 clients, just like right out the gate. And then I think, like, you know, as with any like company transition, there is some fall off. And I think like I maybe had 5 or 10 clients just drop off because they just weren't interested. Mm-hmm. But then I think I kept like 65 of them, and worked with them for like a year or two after that. So like retention, wow, was great. And then, you know, obviously he said, yeah, clearly I'm going to pay you for this. Then flew me out to Hilliard, you know, to actually meet him in person, lived with him for, I think I was there for like 4 or 6 weeks, where we just kind of brainstormed about what we wanted to do with the company and stuff and where it was going to go. Met some of the other coaches who were in similar positions to me, like just OG clients that he had, that he just needed some people that were just down mother effers that would just do anything for him. Yeah. And we all would. And so that's how it kind of began. And then all the company started. Grew to like, yeah, like 300 or 350 clients. Wow. I probably had a roster of between 100 and 120 clients for about three years.
Wow.
And that was like the Wild West. It was just,
yeah,
nonstop.
That's amazing.
But it's, man, like it was, you know, I will forever be in debt to that man for just like giving me a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, cause he positioned me so well in that I knew that I could be a really good coach and was capable. But I was like, you know, I need someone to just give me a chance, like an opening. Mm-hmm. And he did, you know, and it's like, you know, without that, I would never have met John. I wouldn't be in the position, mm-hmm, I am now, all of that stuff. So, you know, I owe that man everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we still talk now, you know, there's no bad feelings or anything.
Yeah.
I still view him as a really close friend.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's really very cool. Similar to my story with like John. Like, I don't know,
yeah,
you know much about the story of us, but he used to play college football for my dad when he played at Utah.
Yes.
And my dad knew I wanted to get into like the fitness. I didn't even say online. Like I just wanted to be like a trainer. And my dad came across John one day and was telling him like, oh yeah, Gigi wants to get into fitness. And he's like, put me on the phone with her right now. And I got on the call with John and he was like, I was like, yeah, I want to make like $75,000 a year and just like work at a gym and train people in person. He's like, no, you don't. You don't want to do that. He's like, you want to go online and you want to make a lot more money than that. Trust me. And I was like, all right, I'm listening. Sure enough, like he helped me build GFIT from like the ground up. So talking about mentors and how much of an impact they make on you. And John was definitely one of those to me. And how I met you, of course. And so, and you're someone else that I would consider a mentor, someone who's taught me a lot. But back to what you were saying, like when you joined your friend and you took on 75 clients like that, it's like, there's no better way. I feel like in coaching, like you can do schooling, you can do all of that stuff. You can read textbooks, but there's no better way to learn than to just like get thrown to the wolves and just freaking do it. And that's the 100%. Best way to learn. And that's how I kind of totally treat my coaches. I'm like, okay, here's like a week or two of training, but like you need clients. Let's go. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's, you know, if it feels overwhelming, then I'm like, yeah, it should, you know, and I want to see if you can deal with that, you know, because it's, you need to learn that skill set, because when you work with 75 to 100 people, like it's a lot of stuff going on constantly. And so I think, you know, you could definitely do it like the slow and gradual way, but I think you have to be very careful in that if you start with 75 clients, then the systems that you build are already kind of based off of 75 clients. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you have to tweak a few things when you get to 100, you know, just be a bit more efficient with certain things. But if you're starting with like 3 clients and then 5 or like 5 and then 10, you know, you can make a whole day of work out of coaching 5 people. And it's like, now all the systems that you built crumble when you get to like 25.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh my God, like now I need to completely revamp my system because I've got more people. And so with the coaches that we have, because they do get ramped up quite fast, but it's not like 50 clients go. Mm-hmm. We teach them to set up their schedules as if they have 100 clients. Wow. And so when they have like 5 clients, it's like, I expect you to be working like an hour a day.
Yeah.
You know, like I want you getting all of that stuff done in like an hour, because you're going to have 20 other check-ins to be doing that day, if not more, and then client calls. So I want you to be efficient with your time when you get to that point. Otherwise, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, you can procrastinate like crazy when you work from home, you know, and you know, you might have like 3 check-ins to do and it's been like 2 hours and you're like, why have I not done these yet? And it's just, you just sat there just kind of, oh, I'm going to look on Instagram. I'm going to do this other thing. Yeah. And you kind of just have to slap yourself and get on with it. But it's building that skill set kind of right from the offset, I think, so really does help.
Obviously, you know, like taking on that many clients is not only, it's a lot, there's a lot of workload, like you have to be available for the most part, but also like it can be very emotionally tolling. Like I know when you coached me, I came to you with a lot of like stuff beyond just nutrition and training. Like we talked about a lot. And so I imagine, you know, having 120 conversations like that every week can be, it can take an emotional toll on you. So something that we work on with my coaches is setting boundaries for sure. But we obviously have to fulfill like our end of coaching. But do you have any like boundaries that you set for yourself? Like how do you manage a balance of like fulfilling, giving, you know, as much value as you can to these people, but then also like making sure you're keeping your own sanity?
Sure. It was, you know, and I really struggled with that probably for the first year or two. You know, I was probably like one step away from a mental breakdown for like 2 years, just trying to like take on everyone's problems. And like, I would worry about my clients constantly, like worry if I was doing my job correctly, you know, if someone wasn't getting results, then I would stress over it. And you know, I think over time you just learn to kind of build that resilience where, you know, those problems aren't yours to take on, you know, like you can, because at the end of the day, we're not therapists, you know, and unless you have a therapist qualification, but for most of us, we don't. And so really all we can do is one, be a sounding board, you know, for our clients. Mm. So they can throw a bunch of information at us. And then what we can do is organize that information in a way and present it back to them so they can kind of make their own decisions and be a bit more informed and just have a different perspective. And so, you know, with that stuff, when you're talking about personal things like outside of training and nutrition, we can't really advise anyone onto doing anything. If you've got a client that's like, I'm having relationship issues, like I think I'm going to leave my partner, and then they tell you all the reasons why they want to leave, you know, it's not for us to say, yeah, you should leave. Like, mm-hmm. you should definitely go. It's more like, okay, so you've told me these things. What would be the pros of the opposite? You know, let's like write those down. And then it's like, okay, now you have all the information, you can make an informed decision. So it's, you know, we're not imparting our bias onto them. And I think that's like a real advantage of online coaching, is because a lot of times I'm in a different country to all of my clients. And so I'm out of like their circle. And so a lot of times they'll tell me things that they won't even tell their close friends or family, because they're like, well, who's Ben going to tell? He doesn't know anyone. And so they can just be fully themselves and vulnerable and honest without fear of judgment, you know? And so all they're going to do is, you know, they might just vent to me, tell me the facts and how they feel. And then I'll kind of just organize things and kind of give it back to them and say, well, you know, now you need to make a decision based on all these things. But yeah, like you said, it can be really, really draining. And it still is, you know, and I think you just have to, you need to, and I'll tell you now, I'm still probably the worst person for it. You know, I will tell all my coaches to have boundaries, and then I am the one that doesn't have them. So it's, you know, I think having at least one day per week where you don't do check-ins, you minimize responses to clients, where, you know, maybe you check your messages once like that day, because you know the reality is, if your clients can't deal without you for one day, you probably didn't do that good of a job anyway, you know, right. Like you probably made them too dependent on you.
Wow. Yeah.
To do the thing. And so you want your clients to be able to manage themselves, you know, but it like you said, it's that fine balance between being available but not being in the back pocket of someone, you know, where they're like, oh hey, like how much does this thing cost at the store, and you're like, go look on Google. Like it's like I'm not Google, you yeah. know. And so a lot of times I'll say to client coaches to have set times where they check their messages, because otherwise if you start, you know, and turn your notifications off on your phone, like mm-hmm. oh my god, you see the red number and then you're just like, I need to see it.
Yeah.
So turn off the notifications, have your set times that you check your messages, because, you know, just that change of perspective, it's you're choosing to look at your messages. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're being forced to look because someone's messaged you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that takes so much pressure off of like, you know, your phone just constantly buzzing. Because man, if I had notifications on, like my phone would just be shaking off the table constantly. So it's like, I have to just like, I look at it when I'm ready and when I want to respond to people. And as long as you do that kind of multiple times throughout the day, that's more than adequate, I feel, to be able to get back to your clients.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times they figure out the problems themselves if you just give them 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas if you're like responding within 2 minutes and having like a back and forth, and it's like, you know, they probably could have figured this out if you just waited an hour.
Yeah.
And so I think just giving just a bit of time can be a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, going back to like how you were just talking about psychology, like if you wish you would have studied psychology in college, like ballpark, how much of coaching is actually like knowing nutrition, knowing how to train, knowing like how much of your conversations with these people are about that stuff more so than it is like the stuff that you were just talking about?
I would say like 20% of my conversations are about training and nutrition, and the rest mm-hmm. is about but like behaviors, beliefs, perceptions, habit building, you know, like things completely outside of nutrition. For sure. I think mm-hmm. like when you get into this stuff, you think it's going to be all about the training and nutrition. Right. And so, I would say for anyone that's interested in getting into online coaching, if you want to be an exceptional coach, learn about psychology, you know, mm-hmm. because you can learn nutrition and training in, you know, a day. Like there's actually a guy that wrote an ebook called Post-it Note Nutrition, which is like 8 pages of pretty much everything you need to know about nutrition to mm-hmm. kind of get results. And so you know, like we've spoke about, it really is that simple. You know, it's one of those things where nutrition and training is extremely simple. That doesn't mean it's easy to do. And so like running the 100 meters in 8 seconds is extremely simple. Mm-hmm. You put one foot in front of the other and you do it in 8 seconds. It's impossible to do. And so like it's, but people get confused, you know, like driving a car is actually quite complicated, but it's really easy to do when you do mm-hmm. it for a while. It's like second nature. And so I think when you say to someone, oh my God, like nutrition is so simple, it's like, yeah, it is. But that's not saying that it's really easy to stick to a plan long-term. It's actually one of the most difficult things ever. Mm-hmm. And so I think your initial conversations with your clients are about training and nutrition, because you're kind of just getting them set up, you know, if they're tracking, if they're following a meal plan or macronutrient targets, if they're new to the gym and they're learning different movements and stuff, then you are going to be talking about that stuff a fair amount. Mm-hmm. But once that stuff is kind of there, then it's all about everything else, you know, mm-hmm. the mindset stuff and habits and then, you know, the kind of the things that people don't think about, like vacations and date night and kids events and things like that, where like work meetings, where they normally, when people sign up to a program, in their mind they're like, oh, like I'm just gonna crush this for 12 weeks and then I'm gonna go back to my normal life, when really it's like, no, I want to work with you within your normal life so this integrates itself into your life. It's not just something that you randomly force on for like 12 weeks at a time. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you do this right, then you'll never have to do it again. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it won't feel like a plan because it's just the way you do things.
Wow.
You
know, yeah.
And that's the ultimate goal, is to kind of change someone's like habits, beliefs, lifestyle, perceptions about nutrition, that they just are that person. You know, like they don't, if someone says, oh, like, do you track your food, do you do this, it's like, yeah, I do, but it's just what I do. Like, I'm not following any plan. That's just me. Mm-hmm. And I think when you get to that point, that's when you can keep the results or change the results based on what your goals are for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. But if you always view it as kind of like, I'm just going to do it until I hit this thing or until I get to that point, you're always just forcing something into your life. And, you know, you'll never, you know, you'll give up things for those 12 weeks. Like, oh, like I'm not going to go out on date night. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to do those things. But then once my plan's over, then I'm going to go back to those things. It's like, what do you think is going to happen when you go exactly. back to all of those previous behaviors? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, let's try and incorporate those behaviors within your plan mm-hmm. and find a happy medium, so you never have to go off plan because it doesn't feel like you're on plan. Mm-hmm. But it's a hard switch for a lot of people, because, you know, you look at marketing and, you know, the fitness industry as a whole, it's nothing but 6, 12, 16 week programs mm-hmm. where it's like, lose X amount of weight in X amount of weeks. And I would say for anyone, if you ever see a, like something advertising, like an objective number in a certain time frame, do not sign up, you know, cause it's like, it's impossible to say,
yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, like lose 10 pounds in 2 weeks. It's like, you have no, like, what if they're 3% body fat? Like, are they going to, do they have 10 pounds to lose? Like, you know, it's or like if all of their clients are 400 pounds and right. it's like, well, yeah, they could take a dump and lose 10 pounds. Like that's not actually making any progress. So it's like,
zero contact.
There's no, yeah, exactly. And so I really, the one thing that kind of grinds my gears is just statements that people make about nutrition with no context. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, people will say you shouldn't eat less than 12,000 calories a day because it'll ruin your metabolism. It's like, what's the context? Like,
right.
What if that person has been on vacation for the last 2 weeks and eaten 5,000 calories a day? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be okay eating 1,200 calories for a week? Probably. They'll be just fine.
Yeah.
You know, have they been chronically under-eating for the last year and over-exercising? Then yeah, maybe 1200 calories isn't a great idea, but you can't throw out random numbers with no context and be like, this is fact. It's like, because mm-hmm. then it doesn't make sense. Mm. You know, like, so like context is everything with training and nutrition.
100%.
Like if I get asked questions, I will always respond with more questions, because like 9 times out of 10, I never get enough information from that question. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, should I do this? And it's like, well, what's the goal? What are you doing right now? Like, is that the actual goal, or is it that you are trying to do something else? Like,
right.
and all of those things, and then you can give an answer. But yeah. It's, you know, it's that it depends is always going to be the first answer yeah. to give.
And I think that's, well, I mean, I'm going to go into the three top things that I've learned from you. And then I'm curious to hear like maybe three things that you learned from your mentor, like the three sure. best things you learned from your mentor. But back to what you were saying. I mean, one of the biggest things that I think I learned from John was how, yeah, it is way more than just the plan, right? If the plan was the solution, then everyone would be in incredible shape, because you can go on Google right now and pick any single plan of how to lose 10 pounds, how to build a bigger butt, whatever, like everyone would be in incredible shape. But why isn't yeah. that happening? It's really more, that's very surface level. It's like, it's about, you know, you talk about like tracking, like that's just who I am. Like you've made it a part of your identity. And that's what John speaks on a lot. And that was yes. like a game changer for me, was like, oh, fitness isn't just something that I do. It's what I am. You know, it's like who I am. It's yeah. who I've become. And actually, fun fact that I've shared a couple of times, like when I was first coaching with John, before you were even on the team yet, I was starting my business, and he was like, it's identity. And the very first thing I did that I was like, I'm going to make this a part of my identity, was I went onto Instagram and I changed my Instagram handle from Gigi Meyer 40 or something like that to Gigi Meyer Fit. Like I put fit in my Instagram handle, and that's such like a bad example. I mean, not to say that my Instagram is my identity, but like in a sense, I made it a part of my identity. And that from that point on, like is now I can confidently say like, I will get the results that I want for the rest of my life because I have made it a part of who I am. It's not just a plan.
Yes,
right. And that's what we sure. teach. And I know what you guys teach too. But yeah, going into the three, and you've already kind of like talked about all of them, but I want to like pinpoint, cause I think they're just so sure. important. And it was one that you kind of just ended on, was the, one of the best things that I've learned from you. Just because you coached me, right. You coached me for on and off for like probably about a year, close to a year. Right. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that our conversations were never about nutrition or never. I mean, I would ask you questions here and there. But it was always about deeper things. And I noticed something. I noticed whenever I would reach out to you with a question or ask you something, you would always fire back questions at me. Like you would mm-hmm. never have like an answer, but you would just ask more questions. So to help someone get the best answer is to ask more questions. And so I'll let you touch on this, but I feel like professionals, you know, who know a lot struggle with this because they always have answers like at their disposal. It's like, boom, 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 stats, you know, science, da, da, da. But like I said, I noticed yeah. whenever I asked you a question, you were never super quick to throw out answers and stats and whatever, like you asked more questions. And so it was like a dialogue that we had where I would say this, and then you would ask me a question, and then I would say this, and you asked me another question. Yeah, and eventually we'd get to a point where it was like, either I answered my own question, or I got to a point where it was like, I don't even know why I'm concerned about this. It doesn't make any sense at all. And it was like something that just like withered away and never was talked sure. about again. Right. So
yeah.
I just thought that was extremely helpful, not only for me as a, you know, as a being coached, but becoming who I am as a coach was something I took on a lot. And that's something that we talk about with our coaches a lot too, is like, help this person by asking more questions, you know, like you very minimally need to know the answer, because the best answer actually is within them most of the
yes.
time. Right.
And that's really the goal of asking more questions, is to kind of, you're almost helping them work through answering the question themselves. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so like a common one that you'll get is, you know, I'll have, and I will say this is probably female clients more than men. Males, where they'll have like a goal weight in their mind that it's like, I really want to hit this number. Mm-hmm. And it'd be very easy for me to say, okay, cool. Like, let's aim for that number. But I also want to say, okay, tell me what's significant about this number to you. And they'll be like, oh, well, like, I think I'll look good at that way. And it's like, okay, so are you saying that the number's important, or that you want to look a certain way? And they're like, well, I want to look a certain way. It's like, okay, so what if you look that way, but you don't hit that number, would you be happy? And they're like, yeah, I probably would. And it's like, okay, so shall we disregard that number and just work towards looking good? And they're like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And so it's just breaking down things like that, because people have so many kind of beliefs and perceptions about kind of training and nutrition that they don't even realize that they have. You know, like I was on another podcast the other week, and so one of them, one of the examples was like that note, like, and John talks about this as well, like the no pain, no gain idea. And, you know, I'll get clients where they're like, this feels too easy. Like, I think we should drop my calories and I should do some more cardio and stuff. And I'm like, okay, you're dropping weight every week. Tell me why you feel you need to push harder. And they're like, well, cause I think it's like, I'm supposed to be suffering. It's like, okay, well, so tell me where you found that out, that like you needed to suffer to get in shape. And then, like, I watched a YouTube video of some bodybuilder that said that he was really suffering and he was in shape. It's like, okay, like, what if you watched another video and someone said it's the easiest thing they've ever done? Like, would that change your perception? They're like, yeah. It's like, cool, let's go with that one then. Like, it's like, it'd be much easier. And they're like, oh, you're right. And so it's just like you said, helping people answer their own questions by just having people like be self-critical. And so it's like, it's giving pushback, but in a way that's productive. You know, you're not just calling someone out being like, you know, like if a woman said, oh, I want to weigh this number, I don't go, oh, that's dumb. Like, why don't you just pull a number out of thin air? Like, that's stupid. Like, that's not going to help anything.
Yeah.
But it's like, and you know, my initial thought might be like, that's a bit silly. Like, yeah, you know, you're just pulling a number out of thin air, but that doesn't help work through like that whole thing where now they can detach themselves from the scale, which is like a whole issue in and of itself, you know, and we've like killed two birds with one stone just by asking a couple questions. So I think like the biggest kind of just like concluding this kind of whole point is not only asking questions, but just listening, like just listening to what your clients say, you know, and I learned this very early when I was personal training, where I wanted to be jacked and shredded. And so because I was young and naive, I thought everyone that wanted personal training wanted to be jacked and shredded. So I would build my programs and coach people like they wanted to be jacked and shredded, when really, like, maybe they just wanted like an hour away out of the house and to build a bit of confidence in the gym and have some fun. And so it's like, well, and I'm like, holy crap. Like, I've been trying to train this person like an athlete, and like, I felt the resistance, but I haven't actually listened to them about what they want. And so then you start to change the training and nutrition based on what they want to do. And so, you know, you might look at a program on paper and be like, that's the most random thing I've ever seen. That makes no sense based on research or like periodization or whatever you want to call it. But it's like, no, but like 50-year-old Karen really likes doing this exercise. And if I give her this exercise, she's going to do the other ones, which she doesn't like as much, but I think she would benefit from. And so you're listening to what the client wants and giving them what they want, so you can give them what they need as well. But yeah, that's one of the biggest takeaways that I learned early, and then it translates to online coaching as well. You know, and just listening to what people are saying and what you feel like they want.
Recently, we had someone in our program come in and say, "I want to sign up, but I don't want to look like Gigi. I don't want to look like I have biceps and all those things." And so it's like, it's very important to consider that, like, yeah, everyone has dreams and goals of their own, and context, like you were saying, context is king when it comes to helping someone. The other point that I wanted to add to that it's like, why is it even important to help people come to their own conclusion, is because when they have ownership, right, in their decisions, if they have ownership in their plans and their goals, like, they are way more likely to achieve that, as opposed to you being like, nah, you don't want this, you want this, do this.
Yeah.
Right. And so,
and it's like a specific skill set as well, in that, like, you can carry that over to like other areas in your life, whether it's, you know, work or relationships or whatever it is, where you start to go a few levels deeper before that, like, not just the surface thing. Like, it's like, oh, like, I want to do this thing at work, or I feel like I'm not getting this thing at work. And it's like, okay, well, why do you want that thing? Like, do you deserve that thing? Like, have you been doing the things to get that thing? And they can ask those questions and be like, ah, like, that doesn't make sense. Why would I get that
thing? Right.
You know, and like, so one, and this is just a random funny example. I had a client, and she worked for Precision Nutrition, funnily enough. And she was getting really annoyed with her manager, and was saying, I'm getting really frustrated because he's not treating me like an equal. And I said, okay, so like, define your role for me in the company. It's like, oh, I'm this. And I'm like, okay, and what's his role? It's like, oh, he's the senior manager, like he's, and I'm like, okay, so tell me why he should treat you equal if he's your manager. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, interesting. And I'm like, did you not think of that? It's like, I'm sorry, I'll put it bluntly, like, you're not equal. Like, it's like, that's why you have managers, you know? And just, but she was getting really riled up, being like, I feel like he's not listening to me. He's making all the decisions. I'm like, that's his job. Like,
yeah.
You know, and it's like, if you want to change that, then you need mm-hmm. to level up and become the manager.
That's such a perfect example of like having someone, like walking someone through a thought process like that and helping them come to their own conclusion that they sound crazy.
Right. And because like, if I just come out and said, well, you're not equal.
Yeah.
You know, that might have gone into like, oh, because he's a man and I'm a woman and all this thing. It's like, no, I don't mean that. I mean, like in a workplace, you have senior roles, which like are superior. Like that's just what it is. But yeah, just really, really like, and exactly like you said, people will have like, they'll say certain things and it's only when you give them 10 minutes to just kind of ponder on what they said, they're like, oh, that makes no sense.
Yes. That's happened to me a couple times when you and I have.
It's a good skill to have though, to just be able to like to be self-critical is a really good skill.
Yeah. So that was the first thing, was to help someone get the better answer, the best answer, ask more questions, right? Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. The second big thing that you kind of touched on too was keeping it simple. Like you said, it's so simple. It's not easy, mm-hmm. right? But it's so simple. And so while nutrition can be a very complex subject, like very complex, most people tend to make nutrition way more complex, or training or everything involved. They make it way more complex than it really needs to be in relevance to their goals, like what their goal specifically is. And so I think before I even talked to you, before we even started working one-on-one, you did a presentation for all of Athletic AF, now Superhuman, where you did a presentation of a pyramid, like your pyramid. I call it the pyramid of importance, where it comes down to like body composition goals or fat loss or whatever. The absolute bottom of the pyramid is adherence, right? So like, it's not like meal timing, what to eat, how much to eat. It's like, what can you freaking stick to? Like, that's going to be the most important thing when it comes to all of this. And then as you went through the pyramid, like it was just so simple and so clear that I think a big problem in coaching and in the industry in general, like things get so complex, people get paralysis by analysis, not knowing what to do, that a part of what we've done at GFIT, and I know what you guys do, is like just wean out all the BS, simplify like what's relevant, what matters, and then that's going to help people be successful in the long run, because that's what you can adhere to, is keeping it simple and keeping it clear.
No, yeah. And so like that pyramid, it was originally coined by a guy called Eric Helms. Really, really smart guy. But it's so universal, you know, and it's true with nutrition and training. You know, there's certain priorities and you kind of work your way up. But I think the lower levels of that pyramid just aren't sexy. You know, like they're not appealing, they're not extreme, because moderation doesn't sell, you know. And you know, if you said to someone, you know, just eat a moderate diet, you know, eat some fruit, eat some vegetables, eat some proteins, eat some tasty foods, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, like I'm gonna do keto or fasting or carnivore or go full vegan. Like it's something extreme, because one, people are impatient, you know, and they don't like delayed gratification, you know, they want instant results. And that, you know, it's again, the fitness industry is very good at selling people on things which are extreme, that kind of promise like the world, and they rarely do, you know. And so I think people like to focus on the top part of that pyramid, and so this is what my master's degree was all on, you know, like the top part of the pyramid, like supplementation, like meal, like carbohydrate periodization for like endurance athletes, all of this stuff. And it's really cool to kind of listen to, but the whole time, because I was already working with clients at the time, I'm kind of sat there and I'm like, yeah, this is like infotainment for me, because I can't use this with any one of my clients. Like maybe like 1% that's like a competitive athlete or something. But even then, most competitive athletes suck with their nutrition. You know, like I've worked with NFL guys and they're like, I'm like, so tell me what you eat. And they're like, pizza, Five Guys. Like, and it's like, cereal. Yeah, like their genetics allow them to do anything, you know? And like, really for them, it's like, eat enough, you know, you'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And so with all of that stuff, like, people love to read all of that fancy stuff. And I think it's like a form of procrastination rather than just accepting like, okay, I need to count my calories, figure out how many calories I need, and then reduce them slightly, and then do that for a long period of time until I get to my desired weight. Like, how unattractive and boring does that sound? Like, who would want to do that? And so I think there's nothing wrong with like trying different methods, you know, like fasting or carb backloading or something like that, because they all adhere to like the principles of a calorie deficit, like if they work. But I just want people to be aware of why they're actually working. Like, it's not the meat only diet that you're eating that's doing all these magical things. It's you've cut out carbs and a significant amount of fat from your diet and you're eating less, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if people understand that and they go, yeah, but I love to eat this way, I'm all for it. You know, I'm never gonna crap on someone's like method of eating if they really enjoy fasting and it allows them to hit their calories, get enough protein in and feel good. Mm-hmm. I'm like, more power to you, you know. Yeah. you do that. And I think the old me would be stubborn, or the ego of like would be like, that's stupid, like that's not how you do it, like you should do it this way, like that makes no sense. But you know, at the end of the day, exactly like you said, it's that bottom level of the pyramid, adherence. Mm-hmm. Are they sticking to it? Like, it doesn't have to look great or fancy on paper. If they're sticking to it, it's all good. You know, I've got one client that eats like 350 grams of protein a day. And like, you'd look at that and be like, that makes no sense. Why would he eat so much protein? And it's like, well, he was 400 pounds and he can eat 12,000 calories a day for fun. So if I load him up on chicken breasts all day, he's less likely to do that. And so it's like, oh, well, that makes sense. But like, if you looked at research and everything, you'd be like, no, that's a stupid diet. Yeah. But you have to look at, again, context.
Right.
So it's, there's no, like the research is great to give you that foundation. But again, I think the art of coaching then goes into, you know, like the experience, the type of individual that you're working with, you know, do they have that kind of nutrition and training ADD where they like to change things frequently? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, well, how can I change things frequently while still adhering to the fundamentals of nutrition? You know, maybe we do high carb, low fat for a month, and then we switch and go low carb, high fat, but we're still keeping calories and protein the same.
Wow,
you know, and but to them, they're like, oh, like this is cool, like I'm switching it up, like my body's doing these cool things. And I'm like, yeah, cool, like, but they're still adhering to like what I want them to do. All they need to do is to get to their goals. Or we say like, hey, let's try a week of fasting, like where you're going to get all your calories in this window. And again, it's, as long as they understand the principles behind it, it's still fun and exciting for them, but we're still covering the basics. You know, it's exactly the same with training. Like you can jump and change training programs as long as, you know, you're providing adequate stimulus to your muscles, doing some form of resistance training, like 2 to 5 times a week, you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. You know, and so if people want to mix it up, then I'm all for it. You know, most people aren't powerlifters. They don't need to follow a like a regimented program every single week. You know, just go in, have fun, train hard, you'll be all good.
That is so true. Yeah. Coaching is way more than just like a profession. It's an art, kind of how you were talking about. It's like, it's an art. How can we help people like this who have different, and that's why it's so important to know that, or to realize that there is no one size fits all approach, as we know this. And a big reason why we've been able to help people and help people be really successful is because we have that understanding, and we understand that there's an art to it, and there's not just one answer to everything. Whereas like, you know, elsewhere in the industry, there is kind of this, you know, in marketing that this is the secret, this is the magic pill, this is the magic potion, this is it. It's not like that at all. And the only way to, again, context, like if your goal is to, you know, lose weight, be toned, be fit, be healthy, long-term, sustainably, and eventually get to a point where you can do this on your own for the rest of your life, like you need coaching, you need one-on-one coaching, or you can try and figure it out yourself. It will just take like forever, like years and years and years to do it.
It'll just take 20 years.
Exactly. You can shrink it down to less than a year, possibly, depending on your goals. But but I love that. It's like coaching is an art, which is fun, and it makes it fun for us. Okay, cool. So yeah, so that was the second thing. The second thing was, to keep it simple. Like if we can help people keep it simple, again, the most important thing for most people, right? The goal, most people's goal, the most important thing is adherence, helping people stick to, whatever it is that they can long-term. The last big thing that I learned from you was a little bit more recent. It was pretty cool. And it's more of like a mindset shift, limiting belief that I had personally that I think a lot of people have. And I know, I mean, you've been coaching for some time that you've probably seen this time and time again for some people. Also, I feel like your coaching style and John's coaching style is my type of coaching style, like blunt, straightforward, like, you know, lay it on me. What's the truth? Obviously you're very like encouraging, empowering, whatever, but certain people can only handle that type of coaching, but you were with that with me and I appreciate that. But, one of the things was like, I remember saying one of my biggest struggle is going on vacations, being around my family, or, you know, doing all the things with my friends, having a social life and sticking to my nutrition goals, sticking to my calorie goal, essentially. Like that was something that I struggled with a lot. And I just remember saying like, and you could probably explain this like mindset more than I can, cause it's something I'm still trying to figure out. But I remember just saying like, it's so hard. I can't do it. It's so hard. and you're like, Gigi, it's really not that frigging hard. Like it's only hard to you because you think it's hard and you believe that it's hard. But imagine if you like flip flop that and thought it was easy. Like it might actually be easy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, remember when we had that conversation, can you explain like kind of how that works?
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think part of it goes to, you know, your previous self and how you act in certain occasions. So like if vacations for you have always been party time, then you're always going to be like, well, because I'm on vacation, I have to party because that's what I do. And so one, it's realizing that you don't have to do anything, you know, like you can change the way that you approach vacations. And then you can kind of break it down to, you know, like what's the goal of the trip? Like what's the goal of the vacation? And it's like, oh, the goal is to hang out with my friends, like catch up, you know, do some wakeboarding or whatever, have a good time. It's like, cool. So not anywhere in that have you mentioned food. And it's like, so could you do those things like irregardless of what you ate? And you're like, yeah, of course I could. It's like, right. So what, like, would you be able to still have fun and do all of those things if you took some food with you and kind of tracked it? It's like, yeah. It's like, cool. So you really can do it. It's just that you're giving yourself permission not to do it.
Yes.
Because it's easier to just kind of play ignorant or be like, oh, like I can't do it because I'm traveling. And I'm like, unless you're traveling to a third world country, like you can find food and weigh it and track it. Like everywhere has phone signal. You know, you can take a food weighing scale with you. We have like protein, carbs and fats in abundance, you know, clearly like in the UK and the US. And so when people say like, oh, it's going to be hard to stick to my plan when I'm traveling, I like to like really break it down for them. I'll be like, okay, like, where are you staying? Like, where are you going to be? Like, where's the nearest store? Like, okay, let's look at what that store has. Oh, look, they've got chicken, rice, microwavable veggies, fruits, like all the stuff that you're currently eating. Like, do you think you could make it to that store and buy some stuff? And they're like, yeah, I'm like, right. So like, it really is quite easy if you choose to do it. You know, and so really it comes down to, it's not that it's too hard. It's that I want to give myself permission to go off my plan because I'm out of my normal environment. And again, like this is what we work with our clients, is having the skill set to stick on your plan when you are traveling or on vacation or at social events and stuff, because you can, you know, there's people that have like lost hundreds of pounds by doing the dumbest stuff. Like, you know, like you'll get someone like lose 100 pounds. They're like, yeah, like I just ate 3 apples a day and I ran 5 miles every day. And you're like, who, like, how did you come up with that? Like, that's so ridiculous. But they wanted it so bad that they were ignorant to all of the reasons why it wouldn't work. They just did it consistently. And so like we're saying, like, it's really simple. It is really simple. You know, if you want it bad enough, you'll do anything. And then it's just the case of having a coach have you do the right things to make it as effective as possible, you know. But it's when you have clients that you can give them any kind of plan and make it as easy as possible, and they still won't do it. And it's because they haven't yet decided that they want to get the results, until you make that decision, it's, you know, if people are still in that kind of pre-contemplation stage, then the coach can't do anything, because right. they have to move through that themselves until they're at like kind of action. The only thing that we can do is like kind of again ask questions and be like, well, tell me why you don't want to do this, you know, like what are the benefits of staying where you are, you know, like what are the downsides of staying where you are, and try and get them to move that kind of process to get to the point of action. But if they don't get there, then you can't do anything, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's, you're kind of helpless as a coach, which it's frustrating, but it's just the way it is,
you know? Right. I think for me it was definitely like logistically speaking, like I was telling myself that it was too hard for me to do it. And so I would it would give me an out of even trying.
Yeah.
And then I would feel bad for myself and be like, oh, whatever, screw it. Like I'll get back on track on Monday or whatever. So I think it does come down, what I've learned from you, a couple of things. Logistically speaking, it's very simple. Like you just laid it out. Like it's so simple. So the excuse there is pretty, like you said, unless you're traveling to a third world country, like you can make it happen. The second part of that is you would always ask me this, like, what are you willing to do? Like, what are you willing to accept, essentially, is what you would keep asking me. Like, are you willing to accept the scale to jump up because you don't want to stick to the plan? If so, great. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's another thing that I learned from you, was like helping me understand that there's no good and bad here. It's just like on path or off path. Like you're just deciding between the two, and whatever you decide to do, you just have to be willing to accept what it takes in order to do that. So logistically, it's really not that hard. I think it really comes down to that thought process of like, what are you willing to accept? If you are willing to accept the sacrifice you have to make to stay on plan, then great, you're going to go back home and you're going to maintain or you're going to lose weight. If you're willing to accept going off plan, then great. Like have fun, do what you want to do, but expect the scale to jump a few pounds, or expect to feel fluffy and bloated and like crap. And if you're okay with that, that's totally fine. Either way, there's no right or wrong answer. That was something that like, it's almost freeing in a way. Again, back to ownership, like own your result, own what you want as a consequence. You know, and be okay with it. And then that way you're like aligned. Right. So then like I was saying, there's no right or wrong to it.
Yeah. Like I've never once made a client feel bad for going off their plan.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't solve anything, you know, cause I'll get clients to be like, oh, you know, I need you to like get on me and make me stick to it. And I refuse to do it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, well, no, cause like, it's not like, I want you to figure out why you don't want to stick to it. You know, because like if your results are purely dependent on me like blowing smoke up your ass just to keep you on plan, what happens when I go, you know, like it's all going to fall apart,
right?
And so I want you to figure out this part yourself, and I can guide you through the way, but like you need to kind of figure out why you want this thing for yourself. Like you were saying, it's you kind of reverse engineer like those things, and you say like, okay, if you're going away Friday to Sunday, first thing I'll ask is, how do you want to feel on Monday? It's like, oh, well, you know, I want the scale to be the same as it was on Friday. Don't want to feel bloated and stuff. Okay, tell me what you think you need to do then over the weekend to achieve that result. It's like, well, probably need to take some protein with me. Probably going to have to track my calories. It's like, right, like, let's put that in place.
Yeah.
And if they say, you know what, like, I'm good being up about 5 pounds. And I'm like, cool. So like, what do you think you can get away with over that weekend? It's like, oh, like, you know, a couple beers, I won't go crazy, but I'll enjoy myself. I'm like, great. Like, as long as you're okay with that thing afterwards, it's all good. But it's when what you want to happen afterwards doesn't align with your actual behaviors over the weekend, then I'll say like, you know, tell me what you're expecting to happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, is it reasonable for you to think that you were going to lose weight if you've just pounded 20 beers, you know, over the weekend? And they're like, well, no. And it's like, okay. Like, now let's get back on plan. And next time we have the situation, let's try again and choose a different route.
Mm-hmm. That's so spot on. That's great. I feel like we could have a whole nother episode about everything that we just talked about, but
for sure.
And we might have to, but I want to hear three things, like three of the most beneficial, like important things that you've learned from your mentor, if you have them.
Okay.
Three.
Yeah.
And then we'll kind of end there, and then pick up on another episode another time. if you have, if you have,
I mean, I've definitely got two, and I'll see if I think of a third one. I'm talking through it. So first one is to never view things as kind of like what you touched on. It's not on or off. It's not good or bad. There's no absolutes. And I try and stay away from that kind of language with my coaching and try and get my clients to avoid it as well, in terms of I must lose weight, like I have to lose weight, or I must do this thing. Because as soon as you say those absolutes, when you fall off plan or you don't do that thing, you beat yourself up, and then you kind of circle back round, and then it gets even worse. It's like, well, now because I failed, I really must do this thing. And you put so much pressure on yourself to kind of achieve this thing that every time you slip or you're not perfect, you beat yourself up again, and it gets worse and worse and worse. Then you go around in that circle, when really, like, you don't have to lose weight, you know, like, you don't have to, you're choosing to. And, you know, and it's the same thing with, and this is from a guy called Martin McDonald in the UK, again, really, really smart nutritionist. He says, you always give yourself unconditional permission to eat anything you want at any time. So you're an adult. If you want pizza, you can have pizza. If you want a milkshake, you can have a milkshake. If you want Oreos, you can have Oreos. You're simply choosing to eat the foods which are conducive to achieving your goals. You don't have to do it. You're not stuck in a prison cell being forced to do this stuff. It's like the analogy that I would use is, if you use absolutes, it's like you're putting yourself in a prison cell and you just want to get out.
Right.
Whereas if you use like the language of like, I'm choosing to do these things, like I want to achieve these things, it's like someone just drawing a circle around you, being like, you can step out of that circle anytime you want, like no pressure, but you're probably going to get all of the results that you want within that circle. And it's like, cool, like I'll probably stay in the circle then, but I can go if I want, but I'm probably just going to stay. And so it's just viewing it like that. It takes all the pressure away from having to do things. And that carries over not just in nutrition and training, you know, it's like with life. You know, I think people always say like these absolutes when they're really not absolutes, you know, like you don't have to do anything. So that's probably the first one. I think the second one, and this is probably more from Alex Hormozy, and it was, again, kind of circling back to identity, because I know John talks about that a lot, but making sure that you're fluid with your identity, in the sense of you don't identify as a certain personality type or like that's just who I am kind of thing, because you use that as a cop-out to act a certain way, which might be hurting your progress. So like a really good example is, I'm a perfectionist. That's just who I am. And so you're essentially saying, if things aren't perfect, I'm giving myself permission to throw all my toys out the pram and just, you know, set everything on fire, because I can't deal with things when they're not perfect. And so if you say, I like things to be perfect, and I like things to be as perfect as possible, but I can adapt if things aren't ideal, it's like, great. You know, again, you're looking at it as like a continuum, not this like, it must be perfect or else. And so I think a lot of times people have like those, oh, like I'm very type A, I'm a perfectionist, like I'm this, I'm that. And a lot of times that thing that they are is a negative thing that's hindering them. And it's like, if people would just let go of those things and kind of just disregard them, saying you're not those things, you have those tendencies.
Right.
So like if you think you're like a type A and you like to be organized, structured, and have deadlines and things, that's great. Like, but it's, you don't have to have them. It's like you have a tendency to want to do things this way. But if something doesn't match up, like you have your meals planned for the day and you leave your lunch at home, you're not going to go, screw it, I'm not going to stick to my plan for the rest of the day because I am type A. It has to be perfect, otherwise I don't do anything. It's, no, I can adapt. I can go grab something from somewhere that's going to still hit my macros. So that was a huge one. And I've had several clients that have had those kind of issues. Like the perfectionist mentality is a big one. And that kind of ties into you going away for like trips and stuff. And it's like, well, I can't be perfect, so why bother? And again, it's, and this is probably the third point that I learned from Trevor. again, it's probably similar to the first one, but it's like everything is a continuum in the sense of, it's not did you stick to your plan or not, it's how close were you to your plan. Mm,
yeah.
And because it's there's no kind of turning point in it. If you go over your plan by 5 grams of carbs, technically we could say you were off your plan because mm-hmm. you didn't hit everything on the money. Mm-hmm. Yet we know in the real world, in the practical sense, 5 grams of carbs is nothing. Right. And you're going to get all the same results as if you didn't eat those 5 grams of carbs. Mm-hmm. And so it's viewing it as this kind of sliding scale. And that way you can always find something that you can do. So like when you're at home and you're in your perfect routine, you're probably right on this end of like, you know, I can pretty much be perfect because I have control of all the variables. Mm-hmm. Then when I'm seeing my friends and someone else is preparing dinner, yeah, like I could probably still track my food, be pretty on point, but my macros might be slightly off. Then if I'm going traveling, you know, I'm probably going to have to eat out quite a lot, but I can manage my overall calories, try and get my protein. Like, oh, I'm going on vacation. I'm not going to track, but I can be mindful and I can say I'm going to have 3 meals a day. Mm. And so there's so many steps before you get to like full on screw it.
Yeah.
But people jump from one to the other and they miss all of these steps. And so I think viewing it as always asking yourself the question of like, well, what can I do? Like mm-hmm. then that really helps. And just a last point to that, and this is a really kind of simple, like actionable item that everyone can do listening to the podcast, is even if you're not tracking your food right now or anything like that, if you just ask yourself in any situation when you're presented with like a food option or something which could help or hurt your progress in terms of where you want to go, you just ask yourself, what would the like future me do in this situation? Like if I want to lose 30 pounds and I go out to dinner with my friends, I don't have to track my food or anything. I could go, well, what would Ben do if he was 30 pounds leaner and he was shredded right now? Mm-hmm. Well, he probably wouldn't order the fries. He'd probably get a salad. Like he'd probably get the chicken. He probably wouldn't get the pizza. Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to do what future Ben would do. And eventually I will become that person by default. Mm-hmm. Like the more times I ask myself that question and the more I act like that person, I will just naturally become that person. Mm-hmm. And I will lose 30 pounds as a byproduct of that. So like, I'm not even trying to lose the weight. I'm just thinking like, well, what would like an athletic lean version of me do in this situation? Oh, he'd probably do these things. I'll try those things then. And so, you know, if people just started doing that, it like, regardless if they're tracking their food or following a training program or stuff, it's like, well, you know, if you want to lose 10 pounds, what do you think yourself would do in that situation if you were 10 pounds lighter? Everyone knows the answer, you know? And again, so then if you don't do that thing, then you accept that it's like, well, you're actively choosing to not become that person then.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, that's a really good, and I have several clients do that when they travel,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they don't want to track their food and things when they travel. And again, there's no right or wrong if you either want to do it or you don't. But then I'll say, okay, well, just ask yourself, like, you know, you want to drop 40 pounds, what would the 40 pounds lighter person do in that situation? Because I want you to do that.
Yeah.
And they always come back leaner. Always come back, like make your progress. So that's a really good tip.
That's gold. That's gold. And again, it goes back to your identity. It's like, that's how powerful 100%. It can, you know, play out for you, is if like, what would my future self be if I'm 30 pounds lighter and where I want to be? Like, I'm going to just be that. Exactly. That's awesome. Ben, thank you so much. This was so fun. We definitely have to do another one later on. Ben Oliver, yes. Everyone. That's how you say your last name, right? I mean, pretty sure.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, you got it. Yeah.
Where, if people want to learn more about you or about Superhuman, where can they go?
I would say the best place is John Madsen Official on Instagram.
Okay.
And then you will find Superhuman on there.
Okay.
I'm not very active on Instagram, but you can follow me.
If you want to, yeah, you and your dogs.
Random pictures of me picking up my dog's crap, then you can you can follow me on Instagram.
Awesome, Ben. Thank you so much.
Anytime,
brilliant man. Stuff. Thank you again. And yeah, thank you all so much for listening to the Live Limitless podcast. If you enjoyed this episode today, do us a favor and share with someone you think will benefit from it. And if you just want to show general support, you can do that by leaving us a 5-star rating if you believe it deserves it. Or you can leave us a review or any type of feedback in Apple Podcasts. We want to hear from you. Also, make sure to check out the show notes for more information or to just see how you can keep up with me on social media. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Go crush the week and live limitless.